start with this story that's been eating at me a little bit this week, and it's a story that has happened to me this week, but I'm sure it happened to you as well. So, of course, it's about 7 p.m. We just finished dinner, and without even a knock at the door, Rina said, Rube, someone's at the door for you. Who's at the door? You open the door. It's two gentlemen in long black coats with beards who say that they're collecting money. What are they collecting money for? So the guy says the following. He says, I'm collecting money for my niece. My brother's daughter is sick. And we're collecting money for her. I said, okay, do you have any ID? Not really. Do you have any documents testifying that you're collecting for this person? So he pulls out, there's like, you ever see like in shul, sometimes you'll see there's like kol koreis, like four color brochures of like, you know, like, and it's really like a picture of a girl, like a girl clearly suffering from cancer, and then they block out her eyes. You know what I'm saying? On the front is like, you know, please give generously. And then on the back, there's all these like hamlatzot from rabbis, you know, like signatures of rabbis. And of course, on the back, there's also information about how you can call and, you know, set up a credit card donation. And so he pulls out, he's got like a stack of these. He's walking around with them. And I said, like, you'll forgive me. But is there any way for me to know that you have any, that you are who you say you are and you're at all connected to this girl? You know what I'm saying? He's like, that's my brother's daughter. I said, I'm really sorry. But without some kind of identification, I don't see a way to help you. And he gave me the thing. He said, okay. He said, that's fine. He said, you can call, you can make a donation, like call the number on the back, you can make a donation. So I went back and I didn't give him. I said, and I was really a sad situation today, but I hope you understand that people, like they take advantage, like to a large degree. We feel a sense that anyone can come and make any claim you want, and I don't know if you've heard this story, so there are stories going around the yeshuv of, you know, people who are at least externally somewhat wealthy, they park their car on the outside of the yeshuv, they go door to door, and then they, you know, go home. At least there's a perception that this is a problem. And so he gave me the number. I called up the number. Right? I called up the 1-800 whatever number. And I said, could you tell me, I said, I don't really want to know what the information is. Could you tell me the last name of this girl? And she's like, why? I said, because this person came to my door and tell me that his name was such and such. I think his name was Fishman or whatever. And I'd like to know that whether he's telling the truth or not. She said, okay, no problem. This is, of course, like a secretary, some woman in the office somewhere. She said, I'll take your number and I'll call you back. No, I'm still waiting to hear. You know what I'm saying? I mean, is this a new phenomenon? Is this something that, like, happens all the time now? So
I have such mixed feelings about it, because on the one hand, I feel if somebody has stooped so low that they have to go begging at people's doors, for money.
No. If someone comes to me and says I'm collecting, if someone comes to me and collects for himself, that might change the amount of money that I'll give them, but I always give something. If they say I'm collecting for myself, what bothers me more?
He says he's collecting for some person.
But he might still be collecting for himself and be too ashamed to admit it.
Correct. One second.
This must be very hard for them. I mean,
it didn't seem hard to them. I must tell you. It didn't seem hard to them. They were okay, whatever. You know what I'm saying? It really didn't seem hard to them at all. And you would think that a person who goes on collecting for a person would have some kind of identification, which gave me another idea for a business that I'm never going to do. But you know what I'm saying? Using smartphone technology to identify people. But you know, nonetheless, it's a problem. And it's going to be even more of a problem, this idea, this struggle that we have of, on the one hand, wanting to give, needing to give, having to give. But on the other hand, there's a certain skepticism and a straightness. And where do we draw the line between compassion and skepticism? And generosity on the one hand, and on the other hand, reality. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to give tzedakah. I don't want to be mefarnes somebody's business of collection. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and unfortunately, I mean, if you've ever, in the business that I was in, the rabbinate, you see many, many people who they make the rounds, and you see them year after year after year. And that's not the business I'm in. And it's interesting. Remember the guy said, I said, you need some kind of ID, some kind of thing in the yeshuv. I said, where I came from in Galut, in Detroit, you would go to a person, they would give you a thing, they would check you out to some degree, they would give you a thing, and then people would at least know that you are who you say you are and what you're collecting for. And he said, yeah. I remember I went with my father once to collect in Baltimore. I was like, oh, what were you collecting for? Oh, we had a sister. you know what I'm saying? it's like a business. He just gave me the sense. It's like a business. It's like a... I don't really know what the... What? Yeah, one gets a sense, you know. There's a larger issue that in the world in which we live today, kids are not... there's no shame in... You say there's a shame in collecting. There's no shame in collecting at all. Now it's... No, no, not at all. Yeah, you're taught to go collect. You're instructed to go collect. I'm terrible. And in my business, I mean, in the rabbinic business, like, I was terrible at it. I always felt that people, I was asking for money for me when I was doing nothing of the sort. I was asking people to share in a, and I really believe this, to participate in something that I believed was important, that I gave my life to, and I still couldn't ask them. You know, it was just a personality thing. And other people seem to have no problem whatsoever asking, I mean, and it's unclear if it's even them. All of that in the backdrop, this struggle goes in the backdrop of a section in this week's Parsha. So we'll learn the Torah, of course, as we always do. We'll analyze some of the text analysis. Then I'll share with you an unbelievable Kli Yakar, and maybe even a Gemara and Baba Batra if we get there. Okay, we're now in Perek Chafbet. We're doing Parsha Mishpatim. Perek Chafbet. Pasuk Yutet. We'll just start from Yutet because that's where the section starts. We'll just read. It's like a gun here already, you know what I'm saying? Kanana Hara. Okay. Maria, you're sharing very nicely. Look at her. She's very nicely. Yeah. Okay. I think she's starting to look forward to it. Oh, the kids are here. Okay. Perek Chabet Pasuk Yutet. Zovech le'elohim yecharam, b'yoti l'Hashem l'vado. Okay, we're just going to start. This is where, I'm starting here because you see the Samach in the Chumash? So the Samach means, if you look at it, it's a Parsha Stuma. That's where the section begins, the parsha begins, but it's really not our issue. We're not going to start with that. If you offer sacrifices to God, don't offer sacrifices to any God other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Otherwise, Yecheram. Yecheram means you will be put in Cherem, but not really put in Cherem. You will be set aside. What? Destroyed. Yeah. Okay? Other than God. Pasuk Chaf. V'ger lo toneh v'lo tilchatzenu ki geirim hayitem v'eretz mitzrayim. And you shall not tone, afflict the ger. And you should not tilchatzenu. What's lachatz? Pressure him. Why? Ki geirim heyitem be'eretz Mitzrayim. Okay, good. That's an isur. Well, you're not allowed to lo tone ta ger. What was I just prohibited from doing? Lo tone. What's that? Don't torture him? Oppress him. Why, can I torture the Jew? The non-ger?
No.
Right. But it's specifically about the ger. Right.
Because
he's different, so perhaps you'll treat him differently.
So I'm saying, again, what can't I do? That I can do, or theoretically it's not specifically prohibited to do to a non-ger.
Take advantage
of him. Why would I be able to take advantage of a ger more than I would be able to take advantage of a non-ger?
No family, no yichus.
Right, he's no protection. Exactly right. He has no family, he has no yichus, meaning we don't realize to what degree we count on the people around us, on our family, on our community, on our support system, just for emotional support, but also psychological support, monetary support. You know what I'm saying? Like, you think to yourself, oh, this guy ripped me off. What are you going to do? Who's the first person? Oh, I'm calling my lawyer. Who's my lawyer? It's a person I know. You know? It's interesting. I'm going to come back to this a little later. Yeah, you go ahead. I got an email from, apparently the gallery is full, but the,
right? Am I
blocking? You're good. No, you're fine. I got an email from my cousin. My cousin, if you recall, I don't know if I told this story, back when we were in America, so the car broke down, leaving us on the side of the road. Do you remember that? Remember that story? So my cousin happens to be an attorney who has a little extra time on his hands. So he saw a blog post about it. He said, if you hire me, I'll contact them on your behalf. Okay, fine. You know, meaning he'll contact the rent-a-car company on our behalf to make a claim, like, because they really, like, they mistreated us.
To make a claim.
To make a claim, because they didn't act appropriately in like, collecting us from the side of the road. Hire him for free, whatever. Just, he said, just sign a document, he'll do whatever. This was a few months ago. I get an email this week from him, in which he says, just want you to know that I've been in contact with the attorney for the company, and they have already agreed that they're at fault, and they're going to refund the price of the rent-a-car for the entire 2 weeks that we were there. And now the only issue is
settlement.
Like, what? Like, you know, and why did this happen? Because my cousin, who cares about me, you know... That's right. And he's taking care of me. Yes. Yes, yes. Pain and suffering. Right, exactly.
Pain and suffering.
Right. The Gare does not have that. He doesn't have that. He doesn't have somebody watching out for him saying, oh, you know what I'm saying? Your family will take care of you. He doesn't have that. But, okay, so therefore, what's lo tonel? What am I not allowed to do to him? Lo tonel. Let's look at Rashi. Okay, because it seems I'm not allowed to do that to him, but I can do it to other people. Rashi says, Ona'at dvarim. You're not allowed to do regular Jewish people, that's for sure. You see, Rashi, Ona'at dvarim. What is Ona'at dvarim? Rashi continues, Kmo v'ha'achalti et monecha b'saram. What is Ona'at dvarim? This is a very important halacha, actually. It's not a well-known halacha. Ona'at dvarim is causing is what we would call today verbal abuse. Right. Well, there's different forms of Ona'at Dvarim. Ona'at Dvarim in general is you come home with you just bought pick something.
A car.
Car. Very good. So in America, this is the worst. It doesn't happen here. Really? What'd you pay? Because why do they want to know what you pay?
It happens, they want to know if they get a better deal.
Right. And if they did get a better deal, oh, I paid $22.5. Whew! I got it for $21.2. What did you just make that? What did you just do? You made that person who just bought a new car and is feeling great about his new car. He feels like
20 feet.
Feels like dirt. Yeah. Feels terrible. It's like, you know, why? For nothing. That there's an isur to a right job or not for him. So the Rambam says, okay, how are you me'ane et hager? How do you do it? 1 second. Lo yomar lo. You shouldn't say to him, zchor ma'aseh avotecha. Like, you know, you're in the middle of the whatever, you're like, we're having an argument in the community. Okay? And we don't do this, Baruch Hashem. I've never actually seen this happen, but I can imagine it happening. Somebody says to the ger or the giyoret, who are you to tell us what to do? 2 years ago, you didn't even know what it meant to be a Jew, and now you're going to tell us how to be from? Like, nobody would even dream of saying that. Thank God. That's an Isur D'oraita. That's lo tonu et hager. Or, lo yomar lo. This is what the Rambam says.
It's not against the Jews.
Pesh, no, ger, and a convert. Pesh she'achal nevelot utrevot v'yavo v'yalman Torah shedina v'piag v'ra. Right? Like, 2 months ago you're eating lobster and now you're gonna go learn Torah. Like, it's terrible. You would never say such a thing. That's an Isur D'oraita. Lo tonu et hager. Very good. Okay? Vizeh b'mamono, vizeh b'gufo. Or to cause pressure with your money. V'lo til chatzenu. Nor should you be lochetz alav. What's lachatz?
Pressuring.
What is that? I know what ona'at dvarim is. V'lo til chatzenu. Rashi says?
Gzeilat mamon.
You can't steal from him. Ah, you'll ask me. What do you ask me?
Why would you want to?
Why would you want to? Because you can.
You can steal from anyone.
Correct. So the Torah came along and said, there's an additional isur of stealing from the ger. It's double isur. Okay? I mean, so you might ask, well, if you would violate the first isur of stealing, then what would bother you from stealing from the ger? But that's not necessarily true, because we all pick and choose. Meaning there's certain types of things that we will do and certain types of things we won't do. Says God, even if you would steal from a normal person, don't steal from the ger. Why? Ki geirim, because he is unprotected. He doesn't have anybody to look out for him. So if somebody steals from me, I go and I'm going to have my people take care of it. If somebody steals from him, he doesn't have people. Yeah, exactly. 1 second. Very nice. That's the next pasuk. Why? ki geirim hegitem be'eretz Mitzrayim. You were geirim in Eretz Mitzrayim. Meaning, don't think that he's any different than you. Right? You all started from the same place. You all started from a position of being downtrodden, and you should have compassion. Next pasuk. Kol almana v'yatom lo te'anum. Okay? Every almana and yatom, every widow and orphan, you may not afflict either. Okay, now Rashi gets a little more interesting. Rashi says, look at Rashi on Chavala. Kol almana v'yatom lo te'anun, hu hadin l'chol adam. Rashi says, no, it's not just every widow and orphan, not just the widows and orphans, rather, everyone. Ela shediber hakatuv behove. Rather, the Torah spoke colloquially. That's the way it's translated. Tefi shehem teshushei koach v'davar matsui la'anotam. They are weak, and it's davar matsui. It's very common to afflict them. Meaning, who do we take advantage of? The people we can take advantage of. Why? Nobody steps up for them. We don't take advantage of people who can defend themselves and protect themselves. So therefore the Torah says, God says, don't, really you're not allowed to afflict anyone. But especially the Torah talks about it in the context of the weak, because the weak can't protect themselves. Okay? Im ano, the Torah continues. Im ano, one second. I'm just want to see if there's a midrash I want to get lo toner. Okay? What is lo ta'anum? So as Rashi says, what does it mean, lo ta'anum? Not to afflict the weak. Rashi says, the Midrash says, one second. Lama o'ev Elohim yitomim ba'amanot. Why does God love? Why does he love orphans and widows so much? Ela she'ein enehem tuliyot ela bo. Because, who do they have to turn to?
Only God.
They have nobody else to turn to. Lekach, therefore, kol ha'gozlan. If you steal from widows or orphans, ki'ilu gozel ha'kadosh baruch hu, shu aviyem shebashamayim. That's as if you stole from God, who is their father, v'hu ko'es alav. And he gets mad. I mean, there's nobody else to get mad. They turn to God. So therefore, if you steal from the widows and the orphans, God gets mad. Okay, says God. Kapet. Back to Kapet. Kapet. Im ane ta'ane oto. If you shall afflict them. Ki im tsa'ok yitz'ak elai. They will cry out to me. Shamoa eshma tsa'akato. And I shall hear their cry. The chara api, and I will become angry. The haragti etchem becherev, and I will kill you by the sword. V'hayunshechem almanot ubenechem yitomim, and your wives will be widows, and your children will be orphans.
Why does it assume that only a man would judge?
Well, we're talking about people in positions of power, obviously. Don't put your 21st century values. What? In general, that was pretty much to say this situation for the last 2,000 years up until 50 years ago. 40, 30. Very few. Very few. Don't get ahead of yourself. Like, people say, people always use, this is a totally different topic, but people always use Dvorah HaNeviyah as like this great example of emancipation. Just know that she herself mocks the people who follow her for following a woman. She sees that as a sign of their weakness, not a sign of their strength. Well, read the Navi. You look at me, Arlie. You look at me funny.
What's his name?
Barak says to her, we need you to come with us. And she's like, you losers, you need a woman to come with you in order to fight a war? That's pretty much what she says. And he says, yes. She's like, okay, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? I'm sorry. You were going to say something?
No,
something?
It's not so important. I was just going to say that within the house, if there was a woman that was
in the house.
Yeah,
yeah, but saying in the, we're talking about in public, and
yeah.
Really in general, we're talking about in the court system. Think about a system of like we always talk about, like the old boy network. There's a reason why it's called the old boy network. You know, because it's power is congregated in relationships and in friendships and who you know and you know what I'm saying, who's going to help you. Even, I mean, it's really true. It's still true. It's always been true, and it's still true. So women might be more in a position of power than they once were, but it's all a question of relationships, and you scratch my back, and I scratch your back, and what can we do for each other? And it's ripe for abuse. So it says the Midrash, it's talking about Gezel. I want to do that pasuk again because it's a little bit difficult to understand. Let's try to translate it. Where?
At the snap, he says, I don't remember if it was exactly at the snap.
Look it up. Find it. Okay. Let's look at the pasuk again, because it's a little bit weird. The Mepharshim, they try to explain this pasuk. Im ane te ane oto. Wait, what first strikes you about the pasuk? Very interesting. Meaning what? Right. Very good. Right. It's very interesting, very unique biblical language. If you say, ane te ane, tsa'ok yitz'ak, shamoa eshma. Right, there's direct correlation, right? Meaning what? You afflict,
it will happen back to
he cries out, I hear. Okay? And then the God's retribution.
You found it?
Yeah, go ahead.
He says, Vetzakatam Shamati.
Mm-hmm.
He also says, He made Tzakat B'nai Israel Ba'ai. In other words, that language is used many times referring to B'nai Israel and Mitzrayim right before at the Ger.
And it's also interesting that we are known and God says to them, we are also Gerim.
Right,
we are also the Gerim.
I'm just making that connection. Then nice. There's a further linguistic connection beyond the fact that he said, because you were also Gerim.
100%. Okay. So let's see if we can follow the language. Im ane ta ane oto. If you shall surely afflict him. Ki im tsaok yitzak elai. What does that mean? Just translate the words. Try to translate the words literally and see if we can. Ki im. What is ki im?
For if.
For if tsaok yitzak elai.
Cried out.
He will surely cry out to me. Shamoa eshma tzaakatar. The last part I understand. Then I shall surely hear his cry. I'm just a little struck by the language, and it's a little unusual. Im anota aneoto, ki im tzaok yitzak elai. It's not really a sentence. You understand what I'm saying by that? So what
be as instead of ki.
Right. Im anota aneoto, as tzaok yitzak elai, then he will cry out to me. Vishamoa eshma tzaakato. It also raises a different question. What if you afflict the ger or the amana and no cry out? Well, then don't cry out. Meaning, does God only bring retribution on the? Does God only bring retribution on those who cry out? Who cry out on those who afflict people who then justify crying out? What if you don't cry out? Does God say, "Well, poor Brenda"? Shmenda, she doesn't cry out, she must be okay. Or is the act of affliction bring divine retribution? Okay, let's look at Rashi again. Im anota aneoto. Reza mikra katsar. Says Rashi, this is a shortened version, meaning what? What is the meaning though? Why did God write it in this way? Why did God write it in this way? Meaning it's actually like a verse of poetry in the middle of the halachot. Is it not? So why write poetry in the middle of the halachot?
That you never forget.
Meaning what? Right. Okay. You see the poetic...
That you remember. It's so different.
It's so different. And the poetic nature of it is...
The rhythm.
Im anota aneoto ki im tzaok yitzak elai shamoa eshma tzaakato. Meaning what? There's a... You know what I'm saying? Think about it. Think about three lines. Im anota aneoto tzaok yitzak elai. It's almost like... Right. Right, God is emphasizing the direct connection between from A to B to C. So Rashi says, you're right, it doesn't make sense. That's okay, not all parts make sense. But, do you know what it means? It's obvious what it means. We all know what it means. It doesn't have to fit.
Hamevin
Yavin, exactly right. I mean, they understand, from A to B to C. If you afflict, they will cry out, I will hear. Don't think that it won't be known. It's a beautiful idea. God doesn't have to spell it out for you. And he wants to say it in a way. And also the double language is also very much, some many of the Farshim say, the double language is very much there for emphasis. Right? Shema, you could say, imano intaneoto, yitzak elai, eshmatza akato. No, but again, the double language, imanet ta'ane. We're going to see in a couple of midrashim about this double language, of the emphasis, the power of the emphasis. And what's tzaok yitzak, shamo eshma. But this is a very, very, this pasuk really, it should call out to us. It's very much a language of it calls out to us and tells us, stop here. This is really an important pasuk. It doesn't fit. And the message is really, really important. Okay? Let's look at Rashi. Reza mikra katzar. Gazam velo piresh onsho. What is hagzama? What is gazam? Guzma. Right, in a sense. To emphasize, this emphasis. Okay? Kumo. Lachen kohore kain. What's the rest of the pasuk? Anybody? Shivatayim yukam. Anyone who kills kain, I'll kill him seven times over. Well, you really? I mean, you could really only kill him one time. But Rashi says, and by the way, you should just know, this is a very, very interesting Rashi stylistically. Because Rashi is always interested in the pshat, but here he's reading it in a very, very poetic kind of way. Afkan im ano tane oto, if you shall surely afflict him, lashon gizum. That's a language of guzma, emphasis, of exaggeration. Thank you. Kulamar, meaning what? Sofcha litol et shelcha. In the end, Rashi says it so nicely, you'll get yours. Shlama, why? Ki im tzaok yitzak elai. Bechulu. Because he'll cry out to me and I'll hear. A very powerful, powerful message. Okay? Next, yeah? You want to see something? Okay, next, you can look it up because I have another Rashi here. Next Rashi, next Pasuk. Vechara ap, 1 second. Vechara api. Beharati etchem becharev. What's the problem with that pasuk? Why becharev? I understand, I always understood becharev as being one of the more horrific ways of being killed. Meaning, what's becharev when you're going to be killed becharev?
Why is it specified the method?
Good, good, very good. What is it? If you're killed by the sword, when a person is killed by the sword, what image do we have of people being killed by the sword?
One-on-one.
What?
Blood gushing,
very nice. What situation do we have? It's in the middle of war.
But also, it's personal. It's one-on-one. It's not like
you have to be in close contact.
Yeah. You like facing your nemesis.
Who's your nemesis? Really?
Do you know what I'm saying?
No.
But you think it's like the Wild West? Someone's going to come and kill you with the sword?
Not taking guess and guessing everybody. Do you know all that?
It's not a money fact.
It's not like the taking wild animals and letting them all the time.
Oh, it's interesting. I actually saw it in an entirely the opposite way. Right, you're going to die. You will die personally, but I actually saw it entirely the opposite way. If you die by the sword, why did you die by the sword? You think it's just you that dies by the sword? You and your whole? Forget battalion. We don't have battalions. You and your whole community. You and your whole, you know, tribe, city. Really? Why? Because do you think that this kind of behavior is specific behavior?
Well, like anything, once you see other people doing it, correct, getting away with it, or like around you, you say, okay, so...
In general, oppression isn't an individual act, an individual behavior. Rather, they talk about corruption in terms of communities and societies. Abusive parents. No, forget parents. That's intra-family. I was talking about abusive people who abuse the downtrodden, people who take advantage of the poor. Right? Right, correct. Why do they take advantage of the poor? The reason they do is because they can. And the reason they can is because society does not protect the poor. That's why the pillow's there, right? Thank you. Society allows, I don't know if society says it's okay, society allows it to happen. And so God says, if society allows it to happen, you know who's going to be responsible? Society is going to be responsible. Because it's not just the person who did it. That person will pay. But you watched him do it. And where was the court system to protect him? And where was the government? And where were the police to make sure it didn't happen? Where were they? They turned a blind eye. And that turning a blind eye is also an act of responsibility. There's another problem in the pasuk. V'ayun sheichem al manot. What's the problem with that? Problem with it is, it's obvious. If the haragti etchem becharev. Okay, what's that? If the husband is dead, then without a doubt the wives are going to be amanot and their children. You're saying it's just a literary emphasis.
Yeah, for what he right. was talking earlier point about point. The yeah.
Right, very good.
I thought you might not make the connection.
What's that?
It's possible that you wouldn't. Well, you should, but it's possible you wouldn't make the connection that you're in the same position as that those people you were.
I mean, just to emphasize,
it's like dummy proof. What? You know, it's like dummy proof to make sure that everybody understands.
Right. You afflict the widow. You afflict the orphan.
You will be, your wives will be widows.
Okay.
The tense has changed though now, because first it's all like in the future. If you do this, and then for Kafkemo, it's like
v'hayu. I mean, that's in the future.
No, that is future.
That is future. It's the vayipuch. Right,
okay.
Like v'ha, and it's like, and v'yihi is and it was in the past. V'hayu and it will be.
V'haragti also.
V'haragti, yes, and yes, I will. V'ha. Correct. V'chara also, same thing, and I will kill you. Rashi says, interesting. Rashi. Right, Rashi says, mimashma she'ne'amar v'haragti etchem. If it says, and I will kill you, eni yodeh she'nechem amanot u'v'nechem yitomim. Do I not know that your wives will be widows and your children will be orphans? Ela harezu klala acheret. It's worse than you think. Why? Shiyu anashim tsururot ke'amanot chayot. It's not that your wives will be widows and orphans. That's not enough. They'll be what we call today agunot. Why? Shelo yuhu edim limitat ba'aleihem. V'ti asurot linaseh. Yes, you'll be killed in battle, but nobody will know.
Because everybody's killed, so there are no witnesses.
No, whatever. Nobody will know, right. There are no witnesses. So not only will there be widows, they'll be widows forever. Chained women. And the children will be orphans. The Beit Din won't allow them to inherit. Why? Because we're not really sure. We have no proof that the dad is dead. So we have to hold the assets in escrow. And the money just stays there forever. So it's like, it's a klala on a klala. The Midrash actually looks at it in a different way. And I think this is the part I wanted to sort of get to. The thing that we're struggling with. Im ano ta'ane. I'm going to read you a midrash that's based on a Gemara. The Gemara says the following. Rabbi Omer. Okay. Listen to the following story. Hayah Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Shimon Yotzi Laharei. Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Shimon were being taken out to be killed by the Romans. Okay. Amar Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yishmael. So Rabbi Shimon said to Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi, libi yotze. He says, my heart is killing me. My heart is afflicting me. She'eni yode amani neharag. I don't really understand. Why am I being killed? Meaning, what's he saying? I dedicate my life to Torah. I dedicate my life to the Jewish people. I'm learned. I'm a Rav. I'm an important person. It's not like I dedicated my life to God. Why am I being killed? What did I do wrong? Amar la Rabbi Yishmael la Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon said Rabbi Shimon, and here's the scary part. Miyamecha ba adam etzlecha l'dinu l'sheila. Did anybody come to you for a judgment or for a shaila? And you told him, do me a favor, wait a minute, let me finish my cup of tea. Let me fold up my talis. Let me fold up my jacket and put it away, and then I'll answer your question. Meaning, somebody came to ask you a question, and you did the most, you said to him, hold on, I got to tie my shoe. And you made him wait about 10 seconds to tie your shoe. Amra Torah im ano te'ane. Ano te'ane. Did you afflict him in double language? Echad inui meruba ve'echad inui mu'at. Whether you afflict him a little or you afflicted him a lot. Okay? So that Amar Rabbi Shimon, he says, Nichamti Rabbi, he says, you have consoled me, my Rabbi. You have consoled me. But the guy in the middle says, why? Because God is makpid on tzaddikim kechut ha'sara. God is much more makpid on righteous people. But it's not necessarily true that that's the implication. You made me feel better, yeah. Did you ever, he said, why am I being killed? He said, well, did you ever mistreat somebody even in the most minor way? What?
So we don't know.
How scary is that, Midrash? Like, right.
But we don't know who it was. Like, what? We don't know if it was a Begir or not.
No, no, it wasn't a Begir. Right. Anyone.
Anyone.
Right. Remember, as she said, it could be anybody. Did you afflict somebody in even the most minor, simple way. Did you cut somebody off at the makolet? Did you steal someone's parking spot? Did you bang their car and they not realize it and they never... Like, dear God, we're all in big, big trouble. You know what I'm saying? Did somebody come to your door and you didn't want to give them money? And even though you...
That's what I always
get. See? But you give out of fear. That's exactly what he was asking. And the answer is?
That everyone's
done something. I mean, nobody's as clean as we think we are. Right? But this idea of like afflicting the poor, it's a scary thing. Okay? Then other midrashim say, wait, you know what I'm saying? Ano ta'aneh, what's affliction? Echad ha-me'aneh et gufan ba-melacha, whether you afflict him with work, I mean you afflict him physically, O liban bedvarim, or whether you afflict the person with words. Did you cause pain to someone who's downtrodden? You know? It's also a very scary thing. It's really frightening. Because sometimes, like, out of a lack of sensitivity, or a lack of knowledge, or a lack of awareness, we do inadvertently cause pain to people, deep pain. And especially, it's interesting to note, who are the people that we cause the most pain to? The people who are in pain. Meaning, if I'm sensitive about a certain thing, like the example that I used to give to people was people who, God forbid, are not able to have children. It's so hard. Because like you're on here, like, it's a catch-22. Because if you talk about your children, it causes them pain. If you don't talk about your children, it causes them pain. Because you're treating them differently. And what are you supposed to do? You know what I'm saying? If someone's sensitive about something, if someone's having trouble with money, even the most simple thing, we complain, oh, you know, I got this car and the windshield wipers aren't working properly. Like, really? You know what I mean? And they're like worried about losing their car or whatever. They can't afford a car. You know what I'm saying?
There must be a difference, though, between intention, because someone can be very sensitive and
you're... Wait a second. Here's the scary part, Bianca. In the story of the Midrash, well, you think Rabbi Shmuel really intended to hurt him by saying, hold on, I've got to tie my shoe?
No, I know. I'm not talking about intention in the sense that you're consciously aware of it, but as opposed to like
intending to hurt
or just being careless. I don't know. There must be a difference because how do you always know? Like you can be at a Shabbos meal and going on and on about your kids and have no idea that the other person struggled to have kids.
Right.
There must be a difference between, like, it's impossible to be punished for something you can't.
Yes, I know what you're saying. How can I be responsible for something I didn't even know about?
Yeah, it's like you failed before you even started.
That's the scary part. that's what I'm trying to scare you with. Right. Some people would argue, right? That's a good point. Okay. So that being the case, let's move on. I'm going to move on to the second. I'm going to move on to the second point. Im kesef talve et ami. Next pasuk. Im kesef talve et ami. Et ani imach lo tie lo kinoshe lo tesimun alav neshech. Let's see if we can translate the words. Don't look at the English. Can you not look at the English for a second? It's a little hard. You don't have English. Good. All right. What's the reason I say not to look at the English?
It's another interpretation.
It's clearly an interpretation because, and you'll see that once you start to be sensitive. What do I think this mean? And then you could say, oh, what did Art Squirrel say? And then you could ask yourself, why did our school not say what I thought it meant?
Or why did they?
Well, why did they? If they say what we think it means, then it's fine. It's much more interesting when it said something we didn't think it means. Im kesef talve et ami.
If you lend
money et ami.
Ami. To my
people. Of my people. Good, of my people. Et ha'ani imach. To the poor among you, good. Lo tihie lo kinoshe. Don't, that's a hard word. What's a noshe? What? Lo tihie lo kinoshe. Don't be like, I don't even know what that means, that word. Noshe. What do the guys say? Anybody? Now I'll look at the art school. What is a noshe?
Creditor.
A creditor. Don't be like a creditor. I mean, if you lend him money,
don't pressure
Don't, be like a creditor.
Like a
loan shark. And one second, that's here's the problem though, because one second, you lent him money, but I can't be like a creditor.
So you can't pressure him to pay you back, basically.
Lo tesimun alav nesha. The second one I get. I really get. There's an isur d'oraita to do what?
No.
Place interest. Okay. How did you translate im kesef talvet ami? If you lend money to my people. Well, how does it translate, Arts Girl? Yes, it is. How does he translate, Arts Girl?
When you lend money to my people.
Okay, what question do you have?
Why are they translating?
When.
Correct. When? When you lend money? It says, if you lend money. Look at Rashi.
So it's like not something like it's...
Rashi, what's that?
Assuming that you should do it.
Not that assuming you should do it. It's not assuming you should do it.
It's like commanding you.
It's commanding you to do it. It says Rashi. I'm Rabbi Yishmael Omer. Says Rabbi Yishmael. Call im ve'im shebat Torah reshut. Every time it says im, it's optional. Chutz mishlosha. Except for three, v'zeh echad mehem. Meaning what? The poor person comes to you asking for a loan. The answer cannot be no. What are you looking at me for? Vindicated about? Okay. Ah, right. You have to give it. What?
Once one of those guys came to my door and gave me a whole shi'ur that it's not our responsibility if the zakat is going to the right place.
Well, okay.
Meaning,
I could be a rich guy stealing from you, but that's not your problem.
God's job to do din
v'cheshbon,
and it's our job to give tzedakah.
Did you give him?
Oh, he had a great check. Yeah.
He did well. We'll get there. Hold on, we're gonna get there. We're gonna get there. Okay.
Wait, what are the other two times?
What's that? Oh, I don't know what they are. One second. The Chad Mehem. The other times. One second. Let me see if I can find it. I don't see it right now. I'll see if I can find it later. What are the other two are? So meaning you have to give him. Don't be like a noshe. Rashi says, don't be like a loan shark. Don't coerce him to pay you back if you know he doesn't have it. Right? Don't be like as if you lent to him.
So treat it as if you're not going to get. Kolomar
lo tachli menhu, lo tachli mehu.
Because it's funny, my family always says that ideology. That if you lend someone money, then you've got to. Yeah, you've got to. It's got to be as if you've given it as.
So interesting.
We do that as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was always taught.
But then, what's the problem with that?
You're not likely to lend as much as you would otherwise.
Correct.
It is a
problem. No, that's not true.
It's totally true.
Because if you won't lend the money that you need.
You know, I was in charge when I was in the rabbi of the shul, the young Israel. I was in charge. They said, okay, you're the rabbi of the shul, you're in charge of the loan fund. You know, great, which is great. It's very nice. It's great. No, very nice for the shul to have a loan fund. So the first man came to me, like, there was like, you know, like almost no money in the loan fund. And I soon found out why. The first man came to me and he borrowed money. He really needed the money. Right? Who's going to collect that money?
Are you going to call him?
Well, I'm going to call as the rabbi and say, hey, Fred, you know, you haven't paid back the money from the loan fund? Like, no, not in a million years, because I'm like...
We had a Ramach in Petach Tikva, and the minute you took a loan, it was an interest for your loan, you gave them checks for the next 6 months.
Pay back?
Yeah, you gave them signed checks.
It's really, loans are really tricky. And what if you can't cover the checks? You know, I think everybody gives you checks. You can write checks from here till tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? But I'm sure in the loan fund, before they cash the checks, they go to the guy and they say, I'm going to cash the check. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't, Baruch Hashem, I feel very privileged I don't function this way, but most people, many people in this country, they write many checks they don't cover. They can't cover right now.
Yeah, that I asked the neighbor when we first made Aliyah. Yeah. I wanted to know if there's such a concept of post-dated checks.
Is there that concept?
And he said, of course you could do post-dated checks, but you could also just like write the check even if you don't have the money in the account. I'm like, no.
Right, it is very good. You should just have, we're Anglo. It's very common in Israel. A, to overdraft like crazy, but even more than that, to write a check and to say to a person, call me before you deposit this.
When we went to buy furniture, we were looking for federal furniture when we arrived here, and we were at a furniture store, and he was trying to sell us this very expensive suit, and we were like heading towards the other direction. We just wanted something simple, and he said to us, but you can just like take a loan for it.
Yeah, sure.
And I was like, for a bedroom set.
Yeah, sure. Like, you crazy? Like,
everybody does.
And we start talking to him, and he's like, I'm 120,000 shekels in debt.
Yeah, and it's common, very
and
common.
And that wasn't on his house, that was just was like in his house.
Right, that's very common, very common. Which is very good, which brings us to the next Rashi.
We're offered to pay for groceries and
Tashalini. All the time, all the time. What are you talking about? Are you kidding? Excuse me, how many, excuse, because that's because this country is at least a little bit better off. How do most people pay for groceries in America? On their credit card. Which means they're already paying 18% interest. If they don't pay off every month, they're paying 18% interest on their groceries. Here, at least, they ask you if you want interest, if you want to pay Tashlumim. And I mean, it's better off because there, it's assumed you're going to pay interest. That's why I had a thing. I had a thing, even though we paid it off, I had a thing. I would never pay for groceries with the credit card, only with the debit card. Because I didn't feel, because Baruch Hashem, I'm in the position that I didn't have to borrow money to pay for groceries. But, like, Neshech, look at the next Rashi. Rebeat. It's called, what's Neshech?
Interest.
So, yes. Why doesn't it say rebeat?
Rebeat, yeah, I wanted to.
Yeah, good. Why is it called neshech? What is neshech? What's a neshech? Noshech, it's a bite. Shehu kin shichat nachash. It's like a snake bite. Shenachash nochesh chaburak tana buraglo ve'eno margish. When the snake bites you, little teeny bite. You almost don't feel it. Upitom umitbotzetz v'nofech ad kat kado. And before you know it, your ankle is swelled up. Kach ribit. That's interest for you. Eino margish ve'eino nikar. You don't feel it, and it's not recognizable. Ad shiribit ole umechasro ma'aman hobe. Until you're bankrupt. Until it strangles you. And so, like, this is Rashi, like, he's describing. Oh, he's describing, you know, this is a midrash. It's history. He's describing. Like
today.
The world today, exactly the world today, and it's like,
no,
why is
this
it?
This is also the time when the church was only allowed.
Now, Rashi based on a midrash. Clearly based
on
midrash.
I know, but the church at a certain point, I think, weren't there all those usury laws, and you're allowed to lend interest only to Jews?
No, Jews would. No, one second. Jews. Let me ask you. So it's very interesting. Like, there's a halacha. You can't allow. Is there something wrong with interest?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Well, the Jews aren't allowed to take.
Is there something wrong with lending money in interest? Morally wrong.
No.
Why?
When,
no. Because money in and of itself it devalues automatically because of inflation. If you money by itself, if you took $100, 100 shekel, and you left it for 5 years, in 5 years that 100 shekel is now going to be worth less than it was. I mean, the way things work, the way things operate,
it's
going to be worth less.
Yeah.
So the money has value now. It has use now. So to give somebody the right to use that money has value. So theoretically, neshech, interest, is not to take advantage of somebody. Meaning, think about it this way. Somebody, you want to buy a house. You don't have the money to buy a house. Somebody has that money. So he lent you the money to buy the house, and with that, he gave you the right to buy the house, but you have to pay him for that right. And he's not taking advantage of you. He's, for the ability to use his money, he has the right to earn something on that money. So it's not that taking advantage, that interest is taking advantage of someone, but instead, it's proper. It makes sense.
You're saying it's compensating for inflation.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's compensating for the right to use money. Not taking interest
is
a hatava. Correct. To lend somebody a significant sum of money for zero interest, right, is a loss. If I lend you $100,000, they pay me back in 5 years, $100,000, I'm out of money. I've lost money. That's what the Torah tells you to do. Meaning, so like people say, it's how should we say it? It's prejudicial that Jews won't lend Jews for interest. But in a sense, it is prejudicial. But it's only like in a sense of familial. It's not that you oppress everybody else. No, it's that you give a special, unreasonable, in a sense, unbusiness oriented advantage to your fellow Jew, to family.
Which is how it should be.
Exactly how it should be. Okay. So, im chabol tachbol salmat. Let's finish the thing. Im chabol tachbol salmat reyecha, ad bo hashemesh sheshivenu lo. When a person borrows money from you, so what do you take? What do you take from him as collateral? What do you take from him? You take collateral. Like, can I borrow, you know, and they would do it in, like, what's called microloans. Can I borrow $100? Sure, how am I going to get it back? Well, you can have my, well, what they would use is my blankets. Salma. My blankets. They were worth something. And we realize that we're living in times where we have so much. People had nothing. So what do they have? They had their bedclothes. They had their, you know what I'm saying? So if you would take it, it says, I'd bo ashamesh to shivenu lo. Yeah, you could take it, but make sure he has it at night. Why? He seem la tola oro. This is his clothing. What's he supposed to sleep with at night if you hold on to it at night? You can collect it during the day. Yes, it is your thing to hold on to. It's your collateral. But if he goes to sleep at night freezing cold because he borrowed money from you, again, and he cries out to me, and I will hear him. Why? For I am chanun. I am compassionate.
So there was no benefit in lending a Jew
money. No, there was no benefit in lending a Jew money. Yes. But this is the thing that I'm struggling with. On the one hand, it's tzedakah. But on the other hand, what's the highest form of tzedakah? We give somebody a job or give him a loan. I'm supposed to expect him to pay me back. I mean, on the one hand, the Torah tells me, don't be like a loan shark. Don't be like a creditor. But on the other hand, do I have a right to take collateral? Yes. And he didn't ask me for tzedakah. What? But he didn't ask me for tzedakah. What did he ask me for? He asked me for a loan. This is... Really? That's the question. That's the question.
It's more.
That's the struggle.
It's more demeaning to ask for tzedakah than it is to ask for.
But you're saying when he asks for a loan, he's in code asking for tzedakah?
Maybe.
I don't think so at all. The loan funds that we deal with, there are, you know what I'm saying? There are people who ask for a loan. They're at a point where I need help. I need to get back on my feet. I'm a little struggling, and I want to pay back. I don't want to be a person who asks for tzedakah. I got to get a Gemara. I mean, so everybody understand my struggle. This is the struggle of the person who came to ask for me. Am I supposed to be like, oh sure, you know what I'm saying? Or on the one hand, I'm supposed to want to loan him money. I'm supposed to want to help him, but I want to help him help himself. I don't want to help him perpetuate his poverty. I want him to stand up on his own. What?
What are you looking at?
I'm not looking up. I'm opening a Gemara. Oh, Baba Batra, oh, how do I know to do that? Because I'm not going to bring for you, there's a kliyakar, an unbelievable kliyakar, on our section, im anota neoto. I'm sorry, im kesef talveet ami. If you look on, if you have this kliyakar on Taf Kuf Nun Zayin, see the kliyakar on Taf Kuf Nun Zayin? I don't know if you have, you guys have a kliyakar in there? You do. On Pasuk Chavdale. We don't have time to do the whole thing. We don't even have time to do almost any of it. Okay? It starts in Kesa Tavet Ami, and he quotes, okay, he says the following. Okay? One second. Okay? He says he wants that, the Torah seems to be saying double. He wants to command us on two things. Ha'echadhu, okay? Mitzad shehu bichlal ame ha'aretz v'derech ha'melechu bisman she'amo v'avada mechusarim tzeda. If you have a government, you have a king, and one of the subjects needs money, so I can loan that person money and assume that the king will pay back. Im kesef talveh et ami, he says, clear cut, no, it's very interesting. It's placed in the context of ami, of my people. Right? Et ani, who is this ani? God says, this ani is my ani. My poor person. Okay? That's one thing. Okay? He will be sure he will pay back. This poor person lives amongst my people. Meaning, who is the real guarantor of the loan? God. So the person says, first of all, you're lending a Jew money, God says?
Underwriting.
I'm underwriting. Okay? Hashenuhu, Okay? The second thing you should know is, Sheyoter ha'ani oseh imach mima she'ata oseh imo. Said, he's doing more for you than you're doing for him. Kedemasik bebababatra, C-R-I-C, bababatra, Yud Amud Aleph. Tanayah Rabbi Meir Omer. I got to read you. Bababatra, Yud Aleph.
It says Yud. Where does it say?
You see the Yud dot?
Yeah.
That's Aleph. If you want, that's one. If it would have two dots, it would be Amud Bet. Okay? You got to go. Go ahead. I got to read you this Gemara. Tanya says the Gemara. Hiya Rabbi Meir Omer. Okay? Rabbi Meir would say, Yesh lo lebaal din lahashivcha velomar lecha. Right, the baal din, the judge should say to you, im elohechem ohev aniyim hu. Right, if God really loves the poor, neima inom afarnasam. Yeah, right. If God really loves the poor, why didn't he give the money? Right, why did God make poor people? Let everybody be rich and everybody have what they need. Amar lo kadesh nitzol anu bahem midina shel gehenim. He made poor people for us, that we should be saved from Gehenim. Zu she'ela sha'al tunus rufus harasha et Rabbi Akiva. The evil tunus rufus asked Rabbi Akiva the following. If God really loves poor people, the very, you know, Roman, dog, eat a dog.
Under the table.
Under the table.
Punch, get out.
Yeah, she's busy. Daniela, you have a guest. Okay, it's really fine. Okay? Yeah, he's going to find her. Okay? If God really loves poor people, then why didn't he give him the money? Amar lo, he said, Kadesh nitzol anu midina shel gehenim. So we should be saved from Gehenim. Amar lo, adaraba. Wrong. Right? It's not true. Zu shemechayavata megehenim. You, the fact that you feed the poor people, that's what brings you to hell. Meaning, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there. I take care of myself. Take out for number one. Why? I'm shulucha mashal. Give you an example. The Ma'adav Adomer, what's comparable to? Melech basar v'dam shekaas al avado. Right? If a king got angry at his eved, at his servant, v'chavsho b'beit ha'asurim, and he throws him into jail, v'tziva olav shelo l'achilo l'ashkolto, and he tells his servant, don't feed him and don't give him drink. V'halach adam echad be'achilo v'ishkeyu. Right? And he says to the the king, stay with me here, we'll finish in a second. So the king throws the person in jail and he says, no food, no drink for that person. And some guy comes along and feeds him. How does the king feel? I told you not to feed that person and you did. So how is the king going to react? You'll be punished. Okay? And the king gets angry. He's not going to get angry. And you guys are avadim. You are servants of God. Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, you got it all wrong. I'll tell you something else. I'll tell you what it's about. So the king, he didn't get married mad at his eved, at his servant. He got married mad at his son. And he threw him in jail. Again, he commanded, don't feed him. I'm so mad at my son. No food, no drink for my son. Some guy went and gave the king's son food and drink. And if king finds out, is he going to be mad or is he going to be happy? He says, look, be happy. We are God's children. Okay? When are we called avadim? We're called avadim banim. Bizman sha'atem osim ratzono shel makom. Atem kuyim banim. When are you children of God? When you do what God wants. And when are you called avadim? When you don't do what God wants. Meaning, so the Kliyakar says, im kesef talveh et ami. He says, God wants us to understand, you're giving money to him? More than you're giving money to him, you're doing yourself a favor. And it's really, how should we say this? It's not easy to always remember.
But I don't understand that Midrash that it said that if the king says that you shouldn't, that tell someone not to feed him and the person does, then he did something wrong.
Yeah. What do you mean? The Eved, yes, but the son? The king says, don't feed my son, I'm really mad at him. So meaning his anger is a temporary anger, but deep down his love is even greater. So while God, I don't know, somehow is punishing the ani, or the ani is afflicted, God really wants you to take care of him. So that's what Kliyakar says. He says, one second. Af ata amor lo k'din yisrael anu midina shagehenem. Im kein ata ose imo chaye sha'a. Yes, you're giving him temporary sustenance. Hu ose imach chaye olam. He's giving you eternal life. Atano ten lo pruta. You're giving him nothing. A pruta. God pays you back in spades. That's in kesef talveh tami. So what's the answer? I'm not sure entirely what the answer is. I think for this mishalach. Because on the one hand, you know what I'm saying? Nobody likes to be taken advantage of. Nobody likes to be lied to. So then the answer is, if somebody asks me for money for himself, I always try to give, and I always try to include my children. I always try to give something here. If somebody comes. And if for some reason this time, but the answer is, you do have to give. Even if you don't trust that person, you have to turn around and say, if I'm not going to give to him, I'm going to make sure I'm going to give. I'm going to make sure whatever I feel I have to give no matter what. And if he says to give to this organization, so to be honest with you, there are lo aleinu plenty of sick children. And if you wonder whether he's collecting for the sick child, there are plenty of sick children and plenty of organizations that support us to which we need to give. The Gemara says something that's so interesting, and I really think this is so true. Darash Rabbi Yitzhak Rabbi Shalom. I'll stop with this. Kishem shemizonotav shel adam ktsuvin lo mi Rosh Hashanah, kach chesronotav shel adam ktsuvin lo mi Rosh Hashanah. Right? God sets aside from year to year what you're going to have. So too God sets aside what you're not going to have from year to year. Okay? It's so interesting. The Gemara tells a very interesting story. He said there was a Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, right? His daughter saw in a dream that he was going to lose 700 silver coins over the year. So the whole year he was telling his children, he was telling his family, give tzedakah. At the end of the year, before Rosh Hashanah, they were up to 683. And there were 17 shekel or whatever that they hadn't given yet. Right before he gets a message from the tax collector saying, you owe us 17 silver shekel. And so they told Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that, and he said, yeah, I know. I knew you were going to give 700. Of course. So they said, you knew we were going to give 700? Why didn't you tell us? Give the 700. We're giving it to tzedakah. Who cares? Why should we give it to the tax man? We should have given it to tzedakah. He said, because I wanted you to give it lishma. I don't want you to give it because you knew you were going to lose it anyway. I wanted you to give it for the right reason. You know, there's intellectual knowledge and then there's practical knowledge. Like, in my heart of hearts, I really believe this is true. Because Baruch Hu decides what we're going to have, we're not going to have. And especially in Israel, it's much more common. Like I see, I don't know if you guys see this in like the bank account. Oh, Masach Nasa took away money. Oh, this guy gave you money. Oh, you got this thing. Oh, they took it away that. You know what I'm saying? Oh, this job owed you money. And especially in if you work for a few places. Oh, yeah, we didn't tell you that you have a bonus of such and such. Really? Like, you know, it comes and goes just like that. And it seems here to me just so much more, I wouldn't say random, but so much more directive. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm dealing with people that I feel owe me a certain amount of money. And now my cousin calls me and says, yeah, you got a settlement coming. You know, like, really? Just like that? No, it's not just like that. You know what I'm saying? We think, it's in a Sanchez sense, we struggle when we give tzedakah. We feel like we're giving our money. Comes the Gemara and says, no. Not your money. The challenge, the real hard challenge, is coming to the point where that realization translates into action. And I not only think it's true, and I not only believe it's true, but I act like it's true. All right? Challenge for us.
So, like, every time a lot of times I don't open the door when they come for tzedakah, because I'm like going to the door if it's late at night.
Yeah.
Every time, like, I hear a knock and I don't answer it, then I should give
tzedakah
anyway?
I don't know. No, I mean, if you don't answer it, you know what I'm saying? If you don't feel safe, then you don't answer the door. You know what I'm saying? If you really don't feel safe, your house is at home, you don't feel comfortable. I generally feel that we tend to overemphasize that in our community, and I think it's unsafe. So why? That's the question. Why don't you open the door? Do you not open the door because...
After 10 o'clock at night.
Are you up? But then, no, if you're sleeping, that's one thing.
If I'm talking with prayer, the kids or whatever.
Fine, 100%. Sometimes I think we don't open the door, not because, exactly this point, and it's all of us. We don't open the door.
My husband
not because out of righteous indignation or I'm really taking care of the kids, but I don't really want to confront the question of this issue.
Right now.
If you don't feel, but say, if you really don't feel it's safe and you really are whatever, you're really taking care of the kids, 100%. Yeah, go ahead. I'll stop here. What? But this is the challenge.
Or you're in your pajamas.
No, 100%. I'm not talking about that. But I think myself. I think myself. It's sometimes that way. That like, how much of it is like, how much of it is I can't open the door or I just don't want to. That's a different question.
What I'm saying, my question is, like, if there's whatever I see, like, there's just four times in a week that I haven't answered the door, whatever.
Yeah.
For example.
You should get inspected more times.
Right. Should I take that as, like...
I think we all have a... We all should have a number. You should have an amount. And then we should add to that amount. Mm-hmm. And we should give that. And you can include in that the amount... I happen to think the people we open... Between you and me, the people we open the money to... The money... Thank God, if we all earn the amount of money that I think we earn, the money we're giving to these people is relatively peanuts. It's not a ton of money. I give to them that they should have something. But the major tzedakah we give is in checks to organizations or to institutions. You know what I'm saying? So it's not the issue of the money. Like, you know what I'm saying? The amount that we give is such a small amount. So, you know, it's really not, it's a small fraction of the tzedakah that I give. So then that's the question. Is it so bad to open the door and give? I don't know.
So they look, and then I just say, here you go.